This program is made possible by the friends and partners of Curator Ministries.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to the table. You're here today with Pastor Maria Reynolds. I'm in the studio today with my producer, Sam, and my husband, Doug. Welcome back, Doug.
It's great to be here.
We just got off of a big Easter festivities. That was pretty fun. Had the whole family in town. That was nice to have everybody back and a big meal and all that, right?
That was the good part.
Was there a bad? Oh, I'm sorry. Well, tell us the bad part, Doug.
Duke lost on Easter Sunday. Terrible Easter Sunday.
Yes, he didn't get his Easter miracle, Sam, but, you know, can't have them all. But it was a good game. Okay, we're going to be in the death stare. So let's move on. So this past week, one of my friends and students sent me this video, Doug, about this institution called the Magdalene Laundries. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Have you ever heard of it, Sam? No. So it was this institution that was established in the late 1800s, and it existed through 1990s. It originated in Dublin, Ireland, and it came about at some point. There was a shift that it came under the ownership directive of the Catholic Church. But in its inception, in its genesis, a lady of society looked around and realized that her community had a prostitution issue. That there were lots of women that, because there were no social welfare system for single moms, or at this point there was an economic crisis, there was no resources from the government to subsidize income, that these women were turning to the streets to generate income for their families, and that they really, a lot of them, didn't have any other options. And so her idea was, let's create some options for these women. So she opened a facility and named it the Magdalene Laundry. She named it after Mary Magdalene, the famous or infamous woman in the Bible that was said to have once been a prostitute. I have not found it in the Bible that said she was, but you know, I'll search that out later. But anyway, that's why she named it the Magdalene Laundries, after Mary Magdalene. And so this woman would go out, and she would sell this service to people within the town. We will do your laundry. We will do your needlework and your laundry. These women can learn a trade. They can earn an income, and give them an option to come in off the street and support their families. It was a really good resource where women could come on their own if they chose. It was a voluntary thing. And they could subsequently bring their children. There would be adjacent housing for the Magdalene children as well. Well, fast forward, and some time goes by, and the woman, and I apologize, I don't remember her name, look up Magdalene Laundries, you'll get all the names. But this woman looks around and realizes, you know what, my idea really isn't working. So for as many women that are coming off of the street, as many are going back on, because the issue really is that we have a socioeconomic, you know, problem. And so we need to regroup. This isn't working. And so at that time, there was a deep marriage between church and state. There was a deep marriage between the Catholic Church and the political system in Ireland, so much so that 95% of their population identified as Catholic. And so the Catholic Church takes an eye at this and says, you know, if 95% of our population identifies as being Catholic and we are the moral code, this is a bad look. And so they become involved with this institution. They call it an asylum, with this institution. And they deem that the issue, they decide not to look at this as maybe an economic issue. Let's look at all the factors that may drive these women to the streets. They decide to look at this as a moral issue. And so what was once a voluntary service that women could come in and have this resource was now becoming an involuntary service, which I think is interesting, coming from a woman's perspective the psychological damage that I would have to endure to sell my body to support my family, I can promise you was not a moral issue. There was nothing that would be pleasurable for a woman to do that. But that was the stance from the church and from the political system at the time. And so they called it the fallen women. The fallen women, Doug, were the problem. The women of the streets. And so they needed to make Dublin great again, and they're going to clean them streets up. And so they started bringing these women in involuntarily because they needed to be reformed. And all this was in a attempt to help clean up society because they wanted to be the, you know, I mean, if 95% of your population is Catholic, then you want to be the moral standard for the world, right? So that was part of that, was to secure that, as well as kind of protect the men from these sinful, fallen women. Well, two things were happening simultaneously. So when you start cleaning up the streets, you have to open up more facilities, because so more beds open up, more of this work starts to be incurred, because remember, these women weren't getting paid. This was a free service, though this was a for-profit business. The women weren't getting paid anything. So before you know it, there was a slippery slope that kind of happened, to where not only fallen women, the card-carrying prostitutes, got to come involuntarily, because we need more workers and we got to fill more beds. So now we deemed over to the falling, ing, women. So anyone who they look at their daughter and think, she's a little flirtatious, or someone, she's a little attractive. Oh, you're showing a little ankle over there. You're going to the laundries, right? So now we go from the fallen women to the falling women, because you are in like the red zone, baby. You haven't fell yet, but you are. All, you know, signs are going to the right, wrong direction here, right? So you're falling, you're going to. And then it slipped even further to where the judicial system started to send women there to be reformed as well, and then slipped even further to where mentally disabled, as well as victims of sexual abuse, ended up in the end going there as well. So when these women would enter these, I'm going to call it a camp, because as I'm reading it, it sounds very much like a camp. Their heads would be shaven. They would be renamed. They would be given biblical names. And they were in the care of the nuns to be spiritually reformed. The problem with the laundries, well, one of the many problems of the laundries, but the problem with the laundries was that you never knew what your time serve was going to be. So if you actually would go into, let's say, a juvenile detention center, let's say you had a child that was, you know, left of center and caught a stint in juvie, you know what that period of time would look like. You're going to serve 6 months, a year, whatever. These women didn't have a period of time that they would serve. Many of them had been sent by their parents, and the first thing they did was to isolate them. They had no contact with the outside world. In the end, a lot of them, as I said, were mentally disabled, had no family members. They would also take the daughters of the single mothers. So if you were a single mother, let's say you had a daughter, a child out of wedlock, I mean, that was like the ultimate shame, right? So you were sentenced, your child was sentenced, on and on. But you didn't know what your time frame was going to be. So you had these women, some of them that are there their entire lives. And then in the 1990s, there was a period of time where one of these houses had to sell part of their real estate, part of their land, to cover a financial debt, and sold it to a developer. When the developer started digging, he found a mass grave, like 155 bodies in this grave, and only 77 of them had been registered, which they drew some scrutiny to these institutions, and that started the unraveling. And I think it was in 1993, finally, the last one shuttered their doors, and many of them have since sued sued the government and other institutions trying to get compensation because it was a very oppressive, abusive environment that these women had been confined to. And so as I'm talking about this story with one of my friends and another one of our students, she says, you know, what's interesting is it reminds her a lot of the purity culture that we just come out of. Some of the things that jumped out at her were that it was always the women that were the issue, that there was no highlight for or reformation needed for the men in this equation, that the government looked at the supply of the prostitutes but never looked at the demand that was causing them to have a supply on the streets. And she noticed that, you know, it's kind of like the Adam and Eve story. You had this picture painted that Adam was the victim of sin, and the sin was his wife. The sin was the woman. And that's how it's kind of treated in this story. And she was talking about how closely she found that to be related to the purity culture that we just came out of. I think the purity culture is something that I don't really know a whole lot about. A lot about, Doug, I think you and I probably gapped over that. When I was doing a little research, it said that it ended in the mid-90s. I'm going to be really transparent. I probably didn't start becoming a real, like, member of a church body until college in the early 2000s. So I probably kind of gapped over it. But I can definitely see remnants of it. And the purity culture, if you're not, you know, familiar with that, basically was, as I read anyway, kind of founded around 1 Thessalonians 4:3-8. It's the biblical view of purity. It emphasizes like gender conformity, modest dress for girls. It discourages dating and promotes abstinence and virginity before marriage. And some would argue that it reinforced the strength of masculinity of men and the smallness and submissiveness of women. So they would teach that men are to be the strong leaders of their household, church, and society, and that women are expected to just kind of undergird and support that and be like these sweet, supportive wives and mothers. That men are taught that their minds are evil, that your thoughts are either pure or impure. So to have an impure thought or think about sex is bad, it's evil. But that women were taught that their bodies are evil, so it needs to be covered. That either a woman is pure or impure, and that a woman is really responsible for a man's thoughts. So if you dressed immodestly, then you become a snare for a man and a stumbling block for a man because you kind of bait them into these impure thoughts that kind of get in this cycle, right? Which I think is very interesting. The whole idea of this, let's go back, 'cause this is something that I've actually talked to one of our sons about. He really wrestles with this idea that he feel like, and I would agree with him, that society at a great level tries to emasculate men. And I would agree with that, actually. And then I talk to many of my students, women, and they really struggle with this concept of submissiveness. Both of these things are biblical, right? So the Bible does say that the man is the head of the household and you are to be the priest of the household, and you are to govern it and to lead it, and that your wife is supposed to submit to that. I think the problem that we run into is I don't think that we understand what any of those things really mean, that we take them culturally at face value, what we think that they mean today. But I don't think it's, like, for example, Sam, Doug is married to a very strong woman. I don't know if many people know that. Alpha male or alpha female, right? Doug, you are an alpha male, but you're an alpha in a different way. You're not as probably as assertive and as verbal as I am. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
I probably talk a lot more than he does. You can't tell that by this podcast at all. but let me say this. Let me say this. And we've talked about this in class, Sam. For women to be submissive to a man, we have to find a man of caliber that we are willing to submit to. And when you find a man that is of a caliber that you are willing to submit to be completely vulnerable to let him completely guide your household and your frame, then you will do that willingly as a woman, even as a strong, dominant alpha woman as myself. Because what I find, Sam, is that Doug understands what it means to have a submissive wife and what it means to be the head of a household. The head of a household and to be the dominant person in the household does not mean he dominates over me. He never dominates over me. What he understands is that he is to treat his wife as God looks at the church, as Jesus treated. Do you remember Judas, how he was going to betray Jesus, and Jesus knew it, and he still served him. He still washed his feet, and he still served him. If you look at the way that Jesus led the church body that he served at that time, he elevated them, even when they didn't deserve it. That's what it means to be the head of a household, is you elevate everyone in the household, including your wife, that you meet their needs before you meet their own. That's what it looks like to have a man that you're willing to submit to. When you find that, you have no problem submitting. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Full stop. Here I am back at talking again. But anyway, so I think part of that, of the submissive component, is as women, we think of submissive as, okay, well, we have to be these meek, mild mannered, you know, women that say nothing and, you know, just obey our husbands. And I don't think that it's true at all. That's not been my experience in my relationship with my husband. He absolutely lets me have a seat at the table, and he absolutely lets me have a voice, but he absolutely will have the final say. And it may be things I disagree with, and he will honor me and say, listen, I hear you, you know, this, but I'm gonna have to go a different direction. This is why. And because there is a reciprocated respect, I have no problem submitting to it. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense.
So anyway, I'm getting off on a tangent on that. But anyway, so she was saying that this is kind of remnant of this purity culture that we just came out of. And I would say that I feel like what I'm experiencing, Doug, with our children and then listening to my students, is that we have kind of had this pendulum swing in the opposite direction, where we come out of this culture where men's thoughts are evil and you have to control your thoughts. Women, your bodies are evil. You got to cover that thing up, and you know, and you know, really, you know, can't be the bait or the stepping stone for men. All the way this other direction, where now a culture is, by culture, we're being told that women, as women, our power is our sexuality. Our power is our body and our appearance. That is the power that we can, you know, or the tool that we can use to, you know, empower ourselves. And that is the culture that my sons, who, that's not how they've been taught, right? So I was not a purity culture, you know, culturist, neither was Doug. But I can tell you that we taught our sons, you know, that, you know, you may not be successful, but here is why abstinence is optimal before marriage, right? And I was very honest with my children. Maybe I don't know if it's good or bad. I guess part of parenting is you don't find out till the end if you did it right. But but I was very honest, you know, with them, and I said, you know, in the end, you know, not every person that you date, God has created for you. God has created one, and part of dating is finding that one. So don't date frivolously. Don't just date anyone and everyone just to be dating. Be discernful about, and use discernment about who that one may be, and look at these characteristics and what are deal breakers and what are not. And, you know, but every person that you have an intimate relationship with, when you find that one, you're going to have to be accountable for. When you come to a marriage bed, do you want to drag a bunch of people with you? Do you want a bunch of people in the room with you because you've had a high body count? For those who don't know, body count is the number of people you sleep with. I only know that because I teach the college kids. But anyway, but that's a reality. And I told my boys, you know, when you date a little girl, you take her home to her parents the way that you found her, because she may not be made for you, but she's made to someone. Don't damage her. I don't mean her sexuality. I mean, don't damage her emotionally, more than just sexuality. Don't damage her in some other way that makes her feel small or belittled or demeaned. And I expect the same out of little girls who take my sons out. You bring them back to me the way you found them. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's funny you say that. You were talking about the purity culture. Mm-hmm. And I grew up, what's interesting is I went to several different churches, and I originally, when I was a little boy, went to a Pentecostal church, and it was really big there, even with all the women, all the time, you know, very repressive about hair and clothes, and it was a big deal at the time. And so it's interesting, different churches at different times take a very different approach to that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of damage can be done when you take these extreme approaches. I think whenever you tell a little girl either one of these narratives, if you are responsible for someone's thoughts, well, that's a big undertaking. I don't want to be responsible for anybody's thoughts, right? Or on the far other side of the spectrum, you know, you can use your body as a tool to get what you want. Both of those are equally as damaging to me. Does that make sense? And so now I'm trying to navigate with my sons through a society where they're trying to find a woman, or, you know, because they're looking, they're, you know, 18, 19, 20, but they're looking for, I've taught them, always be looking for your mate. Don't just date, as I said, frivolously. With these girls, I don't know if they just don't have a strong female voice that's telling them, listen, this cultural thing that you're being taught is, this ain't the way, baby. I mean, I had this conversation with my daughter, who's only 10. She's only 10, and I had to have it at her level, but we had to have it. You dipped on it, so he's laughing because Sam, he left behind.
It was like a picture of something on the internet, right? I can't tell if that's going to look appropriate or not. Like, is this appropriate? And I'm like, no, because I knew what the right answer was, right? Like,
let me tell the story, Sam, what happened.
No.
So what had happened was my daughter comes to me, and she wants to buy a few little things for summer, which is fine. So she comes to me, and one of these is a full-on crop top. And I was like, absolutely not. And she was like, why? And she's smiling, so she knows the answer before she says it. But she's already forethought what her next comment's going to be. Why? And I said, well, it's not appropriate. I said, we don't show our midriffs. It's not appropriate. And she goes, well, I like to show my midriff, even if you don't like to show yours. She goes, tell me why I can't show mine. And I was like, because it's immodest. She's like, well, you're just pressing your beliefs onto me. And I was like, no, I'm not pressing my beliefs onto you. I'm telling you that biblically, God does call us to have modesty. And there are reasons for that that you probably don't understand at 10. But at this point in your life, unfortunately for you, I am the person that God has, you know, given to kind of control the ship and help guide you. And the answer is no. And so I bring Doug. He's like, well, Daddy would let me have it. I'm like, well, let's just see about that, Sam. So I call Daddy over. I'm like, is this appropriate? He was like, no. And she's like, why? He walks out of the room like he never even heard her ask the question, why? Completely left me stranded on this.
I didn't want to say no because your mother said no, right? Listen, I think I've done a great job with the boys. All I got to do is get clean, the clothes being clean at the appropriate season, right? Like, it's so much easier.
Such a low bar. We
missed that bar a few times.
That's true. But girls, it's a whole other thing. And I had to have this conversation with her. And I was like, first of all, let's ask yourself why you want to wear something like this. And she's like, because it makes me feel good. I'm okay, that's a good starting point. What about this makes you feel good? What does it make you feel like? And she couldn't articulate it. And I said, what you're doing is mimicking. You're mimicking other people that you've seen that you think are attractive and pretty, and they are, but it's not appropriate for you. And so, Doug, the place that I'm trying to find myself in is, how do I talk to my daughter on a level where I don't victimize her and say, oh my gosh, you are, you got to watch all those boys and looking, you know, whatever, or villainize her and tell her, well, if you show this and you're responsible for all the little boys, you know, thoughts and do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's in real time. That's a hard thing to navigate through. Thoughts?
Yes. No, yes.
No, but in reality, it is a hard space to navigate through. And I had to explain to her at her level, said, you know, listen, you know, the thing that you're getting out of society is that your attractiveness is your power. But the problem with that, Claire, honey, is that you're only getting older. And so at some point, there's always going to be someone more attractive. And that's the truth. Just like with these girls that are told that their sexuality is their power, there's always, you're only getting older. And if that's all you've ever hung your hat on, that is your power. That's the only thing you ever will have to bring a man. What is that doing to your self-esteem? What is that doing to your psyche? Right? Because it's kind of like the purity culture would say, a woman who is pure when she comes to the marriage bed is like a brand new car, but a woman who is not pure is like a car that's been driven by everyone. That's a terrible way to frame it. But let's be honest with each other, too. There is psychological damage to women who are promiscuous. There just is. Do you know what I mean? So those are hard conversations to have with my sons, because I'm like, as much as you don't want a promiscuous woman when you get married, don't be a promiscuous man. That's because no woman wants a guy with a high body count either. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you both are bringing people to the marriage bed, the people from your past. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It can get crowded after a while if you're not careful.
I think that the society does put a very different spin on it with women than they do men. So other people, the guy that's, wearing his showing the guns never gets, he's just, trying to show off to try to get female attention. Nobody ever criticizes him for that.
Absolutely. That's the crux of the issue.
I think a lot of people say, well, that's not equal. Like, I think society always tends towards equality, fairness, that we treat women and men the same in society. We should. But we know, there's certain things where we do, and then there's certain things we don't. That's not equal, and it's not fair. And it's hard to say that. You just say that to the kids, like, life's not fair. And when they were little, they get mad, and they go, life is fair. But it's hard to say that, right? Like, you've never criticized justice for wearing something revealing. No, I haven't, but it's just different. And that's hard to say sometimes.
It's hard to say because it's hard to articulate what that's rooted in without coming across as just being sexist and oppressive. Do you know what I mean? The reality is I've never had to deal with justice wanting to buy a crop top. That's the reality. I'm going to have to deal with that with my daughter. Do you know what I mean? That's the reality. And there are certain things that you just cannot deny. There are. It's not fair, but it's truth. There are higher ramifications for women's behavior a lot of times than it is men. That we're held to a different standard than men. Kind of like the Adam and Eve story. Adam was fell victim to the sin, and the sin was the woman. That's a heavy crown to carry. Do you know what I mean? And that's hard when you have a daughter trying to navigate through that.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard. But anyway, any closing thoughts or remarks?
Yeah, that's why I just say, whatever your mom says, you can't wear it.
Oh, my gosh.
She is the final arbiter of women's fashion or women's mores on clothing.
Well, I told my sons and my daughter this many times because they understand that daddy has the final say in the house, but they really understand that I'm the gatekeeper, right? And if you really want to get past... If you really want to get a place of yes with daddy, you got to get through mommy first, right? It's just the truth. It's just the truth. And if you get mommy on your side, then, you're as good as golden in most times. And I said, daddy's the head. He always calls the shots. He always has the final say, but mommy's the neck. And I turn that head in whatever direction mommy wants.
That's right.
Well, anyway, we're not going to solve all the world's problems today, but I thought it was an interesting story about the Magdalene laundries and a fascinating conversation about the purity culture that kind of we've just come out of. Anyway, well, thanks for being here today. I appreciate your time. And as always, table listeners, we will see you next week.
We hope you are enjoying today's show. We believe that God has given us a voice to impact communities and regions all over the world. If you would like to make sure that voice is heard, please partner with us today by visiting www.expressionradio.org and click donate. You can also text give by texting the dollar amount followed by the word radio to the number 84321. First-time text givers, please choose Expression Church of Huntington when prompted. All gifts are tax deductible. Join us as we change the world.